Welcome to For the Record, an unfiltered view on current trends and timeless advice for surviving in the aesthetics industry. Whether you're an injector, practice owner, sales rep, or marketer, it's time to set the record straight. Each week, we cut through the chaos and showcase diverse perspectives and winning ideas from the best minds in the industry. I'm your host, Dr. Tiffany Hall, Chief Growth Officer at Aesthetic Record. Now, let's get started on this week's episode. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of For the Record. This is episode 57 of season 3, and we have another hometown girl on the podcast today, another Texas girl with us today. We have on today Roxy Dreese, who owns an amazing medical spa in Southlake, Texas, in Dallas, Texas, called SkinRx. She founded it in 2015 and it is a combination or culmination of esthetician services, injector services. She is thriving. She's scaling. She's one of the most competitive markets in the whole country. She was also an AN 4.0 faculty member last year and crushed it and delivered a Nexties nomination. So we are so happy to welcome you to our show today, Roxy.
Thank you for having me, Tiffany.
Well, I feel like we're blonde twins today. We have our Texas hair going and our Texas toods, as they say.
There's to be that humidity.
Yes, well, it's lovely today in Texas, but we're glad to have you on because you're our first esthetician of this whole season, which we usually have lots of them, but you're the first one. But your story is so incredibly unique because you have this amazing medical spa doing all kinds of services, and you are an esthetician, which, by the way, she was Dermascope's national favorite esthetician in 2021, so she's very good at what she does. But we're going to dive into all of your business acumen today and what you know about your scale and hiring and firing and people and all the different things. So let's start first, though, with a little bit about you. So tell us about your story.
Sure. I have been in the entrepreneurial world for a long time. My mom was a spa owner and still is in Florida. And so I was the oldest of five kids, got drug around her business growing up. And I said, I would never do this. And here I am. So I love the aesthetics world. I've always had skincare issues and I've sought out help over the years. So finally, I decided one day when I grow up at 30, I'm going to open my own. I'm going to start working for a med spa, learn the industry, which I did relentlessly, 70-hour weeks, and decided to go on my own after 3 years of that and build slowly. So here I am.
And that was, what, 2015 that you opened? So 3 years. You know, it's funny. We always say with our parents, I'll never do that, and then we always all end up doing it. But I read about you in your bio that you had a lot of skin concerns and cystic acne and all kinds of different things happening. And so I love when it's like a story that's passionate for you that you come into the industry, because this industry, as you know, will eat your soul. It does all of us. It consumes us. But from an esthetician standpoint, you know, thinking about where you are now and this just whole industry after COVID with skincare becoming so popular, do you feel like the esthetician brand has grown in its importance, how you know, benefits of practice? Like, give us your thoughts on that, because I'm seeing this like amazing tidal wave of estheticians that I'm so happy to finally see.
I think so. I think 2020 kind of shook the world, and all these, especially Gen Z that were going to college for certain things, they just kind of stopped and got on the TikTok trend, and now they dove into skincare. Now they changed their complete major and they're going into aesthetics. I see so many resumes every week. So I think something rattled where, you know, self-care was a huge thing then, and all of a sudden our faces are on Zoom and people are noticing themselves a lot more. So it helped our industry quite a bit.
Yeah, we're still in the boom. But thinking about your practice, so SkinRx, for you guys that don't know, look it up. It has two locations. And it's, I mean, like I said, this is the most competitive market, or one of, in the country. So the fact that you're surviving here with two locations is, first of all, miraculous. But it's just hard to do here. But second of all, when you started it in 2015, were you looking at only esthetician services? And at what point did you decide to expand it beyond that to incorporate more of the medical injectable kind of things?
So I was only aesthetics in 2015, and I was sending clients out constantly, working with other injectors in the area, kind of personality matching. And it got to be really difficult because they were scheduled somewhere. They'd come for me for aesthetic service, and there was a lot of confusion on when you can do what. And I decided it was the best thing to do it in-house. So after years of doing research and kind of recruiting the right people, having the right planning as far as legal planning, investments, that was important and it took time. So into 2019, right before pandemic, we brought in injectables. I brought in a wonderful nurse practitioner that's very well known. So that was fun to watch her grow. She since moved on closer to home, and now I have other injectors. So that's where I'm at now.
When I think about that, you know, let's go back to 2015, you know, circa way pre-pandemic. You're referring people out to other injectable practices. You know, I think about that too. If they go to that practice and they have skincare services, do they stop coming to you because they're already there? And, you know, do you lose them? But I hear a lot that, you know, we don't need an esthetician. We do injectables. We're primarily focused on injectables and med spa services. And I think to myself, how many people did you refer out in those 3 years that you were doing this before you ever brought in your injector? Like, how much money did you make for someone else because of referral services? What has that meant for your business as you think about long-term, even patient retention, having both the esthetician side and the injectable side all in one, under one roof?
So it was nice to be able to work and get to know the community that way as well and get to know who's in your area. I think there's enough people to go around. You know, people talk about competition down the road, and I always say there is plenty of people around, and it comes down to personality matching and relationship building. So a lot of those same clients that I had for aesthetic services that were going elsewhere for injectables are now enjoying it being in one location. So I see them slowly, you know, we have a membership program, so there's incentives to do everything in one place. But I've always respected everyone in my community that I work with alongside that have great reputations. And like I said, there's enough to go around, but it's really nice when you can have these beautiful packages together and people have the great results all together in one location.
Yeah, I'd imagine that they refer too. You know, I'm here for a facial. I complain about my skin in some way. It's like, oh, you should get microneedling. You should get a laser. You should get an injectable treatment. I mean, I'm sure that's an easy referral from one to the other. And as you think about that, this is like completely off the wall, but do you pay your estheticians to refer to your injectors and vice versa? Like, is there like a bird dog fee of some sort, or is it just what's good for the goose is good for the gander?
I've been really, over the years, I think team is important wherever you work, right? It's not the one person that's bringing the place to life and the profit. It's a team culture. So that's huge for me. So in that sense, no, they refer back and forth to each other because it benefits beautifully that way. If I were to keep track of every single person that referred back and forth, that's a nightmare. And then it kind of divides the team culture. So I see it working better where, you know, they're referring back and forth to each other. And that works beautifully. There's no fuss about it and no drama. And that's just the way it works.
Well, it's like a care team in the hospital, right? You want your anesthesiologist to talk to your cardiologist before you go into heart surgery. I've never understood that. And we have accounts here at Aesthetic Record that try to figure out the commission from referrals. But it just doesn't make any, it's just too hard. I mean, to your point, if we're constantly referring all day long in and out, how would you ever keep track of that? And is it patient lifetime value? Is it on that one interaction? Like, it's just, I think commission in general is very hard, period. I like productivity goals, but I can imagine it's quite a complex thing. But I would envision too that on the injectable side, they're also pushing people to the estheticians also. You know, I am a prime example. I have terrible skincare routines, or I used to. Now I have much better. But I was getting Botox religiously, but didn't have any moisturizer ever. So someone was like, you might want to protect the investment. Think about that. So does it work equally as much the other way?
It does. How many people come to us for Botox and they have horrible skin? And the things you hear them talk about are usually their skin when they start talking. So you can do a lot by injectables, but you can't, you know, iron out that tablecloth, as we say. You need the skincare services. Products are great. You can get people on products. The problem I find with that is injectors that are just only doing products, they're usually misusing the products. And then there's that issue as well. So having everything all in one house seems to be, it's the most beautiful way to do it.
Well, I'm sure that with the esthetician services, because I see my esthetician more than I see my injector, the frequency of visit is higher, which, as we know in this business, you want them just to come into practice for anything, just walk in the door for anything. And when you get here, we'll try to upsell you, obviously, things that you need, not just random things. But, you know, just coming in the door is super helpful to try to sell or offer a service. So what's like an average, and this may be totally putting on the spot, what's like your average frequency for a patient to visit per year that's on a really good esthetician schedule?
Well, I would say about nine times a year, but then we launched a membership program last year, and everybody's really great about coming every 4 weeks. So we usually see everybody 12 times a year. We also do VIP events for those members. So they'll come in for extra bonus times. They get to be in the know anytime we bring anything new on. So they feel like they're a little more in the know and this VIP status.
Well, if you weren't convinced you needed to have an emphasis on esthetician services 12 times a year, my God, you should be. When she said that, my eyes just like bulged out of my head. 12 times a year, that people would kill for that. I mean, we do well in the toxin world to get them twice a year, and that's when their wrinkles come back and they're like just over it and they come in, not because they really want to. I mean, 12X is incredible. So I can imagine that with a VIP program, you just don't lose them. I think the other part's retention. If they're coming into your practice, you don't lose them to someone else because they're constantly seeing you and engaging with you, engaging with your staff. Like, it just seems like a returning, you know, it's a return on investment 12 times a year. Like, what a genius idea. But you mentioned products. So where does product sales fit in that? Because I feel like one of the hardest things for med spas to do, or that we hear every day here, is like selling products is hard. I don't have time for it. Where do I do it? When does it fit in? Like, I don't want to pick a random thing off the shelf and present it. How does an esthetician who is, you know, obviously knows what's going on and knows all the things, how do you prepare your staff to do that and do it well?
I always say education is key to everything, even with a good injector, right? So even a good surgeon, education. So as far as products, I don't feel like I've ever had anybody that's pushy with retail because they're confident. They're educated. They know what they're selling. So customizing it, number one, is a big deal these days. So you're not going to put, I won't put the same, you know, you won't have the same regimen as your neighbor. So customizing it, number one, following through with that person, always following up, seeing how they're doing after a few weeks. Most of them leave and they forget what you say and they want to call back. So follow up is a huge deal that a lot of people don't do. I think that's the normal mistake in a lot of these practices. But otherwise, I think education and just knowing your retail, and estheticians do a great job typically doing it because they're in a room, they have time to discuss and they have time to talk. When you're in a Botox touch-up appointment, you know, you are in and out the door and there's not a lot of time to talk about this pesky little texture. So I think the esthetician has the great advantage of, you know, being detailed and customized with that.
Well, you just hit something right there that makes me crazy, because I am terrible. Is when you get home with it, what order do you put it in? Like, do you put your serum on, your vitamin C? Like, we all know, you know, those of us who are kind of in the world know now because we've talked about it so much on podiums and things everywhere. But for the average consumer, they have no idea what goes on first, how frequently. Like, I think about retinol, using it every single day and their skin's peeling off. They don't know why. You know, just when do you use your AHA, BHA versus your regular gentle cleanser? And I feel like there's got to be a nut to crack here where when people buy it in the practice, they get like an email or a text or something that says, you bought all these great things. Here's your regimen when you get home. Here's how to do it, your AM and your PM. Are you doing things like that, or do your estheticians help them when they get home? Because I feel like when you buy an amazing Ferrari, but you can't figure out how to turn it on and drive it, like it just sits in the driveway, no one cares. How do you turn that Ferrari on and drive it? Help us out with that, because that's always a big, big issue for us.
I think when you have somebody that holds you accountable, right? Trainer in the gym, they're going to follow up with you on your nutrition and getting back in there. So as far as when they leave, following up with what you told them, we also have a take home, kind of like a retail prescription paper sort of. And so they take that home and it has the order of AM, PM. So something like that they can refer to, and then following up, holding them accountable, making sure they're using it, because most people get their package home, they leave in the bag for a week or two, then they're coming in for their next appointment and they just opened it the day before. So holding them accountable.
That'd be me. Well, I think that's also the benefit of when you don't buy it on Amazon, right? So if they buy it from you, they get the benefit of having a skin coach, if you want to call it that, to help them along the way, versus if you buy it from Amazon or wherever else you want to buy it, whatever store, none of that comes with it. Now, you know, I find practices who still do that out of the goodness of their hearts. I'm like, no, that's the benefit of them buying it from you, is that they get your expertise. If they don't buy it from you, they shouldn't get to you know, spend your hours of help if you're not getting the profit of it. So how do you see, or are you even, you know, seeing where people are choosing to go retail versus buying it from you? Or is it just the convenience of being there that makes them be like, you know what, put it in the bag, I'll go ahead and get it today?
So I see convenience being everything, right? I mean, I know there's, you can get almost anything on Amazon. However, where does that Amazon package come from? I have a story from 15, 20 years ago. My sister's was married to somebody at the time, and he had an Amazon store. And guess where all his products were stored? In his garage, 102 in Florida. And there's no regulation with that whatsoever. But he had a 5-star rating, and he had better prices, and people paid for that. So my point being is always go to a verified buyer. When they're buying from us, it's all about convenience and coaching them and teaching them how to use everything correctly. Because most people don't like to look at the package, don't like to read the little detail. They want to know. They want to see.
When I can envision, you know, again, the rate of return, if they're not, even if they're not coming into practice, they're still going to replenish their skincare. So you're getting like double the benefit from skincare regimens, and then also from esthetician services, and we're getting injectables done. So you've got a lot of sticky things to bring them in, if you will. But thinking through that, I had an injector tell me last week, she's doing a lecture for Aesthetic Next. Like, I'm almost building two businesses under one roof, because my esthetician services are so different. The schedule, the room setup, the patient flow versus my injectable patients. Do you feel like that's a thing that you have to deal with, where it's almost like it's two different kinds of businesses? And if so, how do you bring that all back together where it's one united culture, if you want to call it that?
We're really good at having meetings together. So I think bringing those in together, I see so many places that go months without having a team meeting. And I think that's crazy. So number one thing, Nivel Unified, make sure you're having those team meetings. You always have one lead on each side. So if you have 2, 3, 6 injectors, having one lead. Estheticians, same thing, have a lead. Those leads meet often. And then we have a whole team meeting as well. So it keeps everybody connected. And then also trading out services. We're really good still with trading out services. It's something that we do, and we want to stick to what we preach. So I think that's important too, just to keep that team culture going.
So like, I'll do your Botox if you'll do my facial, laser, whatever the thing. I love that, because I can all try the stuff too. But, you know, thinking through just money, because at the end of the day, this is a profitable business, or we hope it is a profitable business, and skincare and all the services. As an owner of a practice or two practices, you know, do you look at services and think, gosh, we're making no money on that, it's not worth it, we're working our butts off for nothing? And if, you know, in that context, like, what are the things that are just big wins that, you know, you feel like those are the money makers or the steady Eddie cash cows that always deliver for you in the practice that you would never get rid of? And one of those things that you're like, I thought it was going to be a genius idea, and it was a freaking cluster. Give us both sides of that coin.
Oh, okay. So there's been a few instances, but I think one of them, I mean, it's nice when a rep puts ROI in front of you and you think this can't go wrong. That's not the case. So really finding out what works in the market, number one, seeing what your patients, clientele, what are they looking for? What would they be interested in? And knowing they would be okay with the price of it, because a lot would love it, but when they find out, oh, this Keravive treatment is $525. No, thank you. I thought I wanted it, but now I don't. So I would say Hydrafacial offers a scalp treatment, Keravive, and that's been difficult to sell because people simply don't want to spend that money on their scalp. So that was kind of one of those services where I thought it would do well, and it hasn't quite. Yeah, so that's a big one.
Well, I think about the scalp being just an odd area. I mean, no one goes in thinking about their scalp. That's why I think hands are hard too, because people look at their face and say, I want to invest all the money in my face. I know hands are important, but like, I'm not here for that. I'm here for my face. And so I feel like hands are a thing that are really, that's really hard as well. But what are the things that, you mentioned Hydrafacial there. I think people love the fact that the social media, the SEO, you type that word in and it's like, my gosh, you see all the celebrities, you see all the things. But are there things that you offer that you'd recommend a person who's starting out, you know, as a new owner in a practice, that you would say, you have to have this service, this is how you print money, this is how you get people in the front door? What are those things that are, that always deliver for you?
I always say there's a gateway treatment, right? So aesthetic services are that most of the time. So if they don't have aesthetic services, I think something like IV therapy, wellness shots, that is a easy service to have. And it gets people in the door. Even Upnique, one of beautiful story is somebody came to us for Upnique drops. They're one of our best VIP clients now. They've had full face Sculptra, everything. And all they did was come in for a consult for Upnique. So something that simple could turn into something bigger, and mainly consultations, educating your staff on how to do great consultations will lead to everything, right? So just laying that out there during the consultation, making sure your consultation form is fit really nicely in detail, and then it will lead to other services. So I would say aesthetic services. Hydrofacial is an easy one to do. There's other simple treatments that will lead to other things. Or besides Botox or Dysport, I think, you know, something like PRF injections, scalp injections, that leads to other things as well. Just those little items.
Yeah, I think PRF is great, or PRP if you're not ready to do an injectable yet. Like, I'm not ready for filler. I'll try the easy gel or some of the new things that have come out to see if I'm, you know, like, I think about tear troughs a lot. You know, you have your esthetician who's trying to get your skin up to par with your tear troughs. You know, it's damaged, it's dry, flaky, whatever it is, looks blue. Then you try PRF, PRP, and then if that doesn't work, you go to injectable. So you kind of get a stair-stepped process of improvement, not just, I'm going to get some tear trough injections on day one and I know nothing about it. And, you know, that's a very intimidating procedure if you haven't had it done. It feels a little crazy, but I just think you've got a really nice pipeline there for your, you know, for your patients. But do you see men coming in? Because we keep hearing about men are everywhere. The numbers don't say that. I think it's a recency effect where people think they have men in their practices, but they really don't have men in the practice. Are you seeing that in your business that they're coming in? And if they are coming in, are they coming in for esthetician services, or is it only for things like PRP or, you know, more of the injectable side?
The trend is more and more men on the injectable side. They want something that works. They want to see a difference instantly. They don't want the fluff and buff. So typically, I see it more injectable side. We're seeing a lot with PRF as well. Of course, scalp injections. I think hair loss is one of the most tragic things for men in the beginning phase. So they'll do anything. Otherwise, I see men more and more since 2020 and Zoom calls. I think it really put that out there. They see their face on the computer for the first time and realize, wow, I look older. My wife looks younger. So we're seeing this trend of the females and the wives looking younger than the men for the first time. But it's because we're doing all the preventative great treatments and now they're catching on.
Yeah, I feel like if you're in an environment where you have to sell something or be in front of the public, you know, if you're like a banker or an insurance, whatever it is, whatever you're doing, and you're a man, like, you have to look, what do they say? You have to be tall, dark, and, you know, attractive to sell. That's just part of it. I think it's the same for females, too. You know, if you're more attractive, you sell things more easily. But I'm like, yeah, guys, it's time to get on the wagon and, like, get your stuff together. But I think the hair loss thing has become very important, especially with all the new things we have to treat it. But you know, I keep hearing about it, and I keep wanting to know, like, who's going to crack that nut of how to get men in practices. I think with hormone therapy now, I think even semaglutide's bringing them in for weight loss. Like, there's things that are happening, but we just don't see it as much. And I think their skin, to your point, is the least of their worries. They're like, no, I want the wrinkles to be gone, but forget the skin quality. Like, I'll use my Dial soap, you know, that I use in my body and my hair, and we'll just call it a day. So we'll get them one day. But are you guys on the weight loss trend over there in your practices? Is that taking over? Because I'm hearing about it. I mean, I'm on it right now, but I'm hearing about it everywhere.
I will always say I'm never the first to jump on anything. So I watch the market trend. I'll do the research. We are not on it. It is a daily talk. But I am one of those that take my time, make sure everything's perfected before I bring it on. And so I'm watching the market with it. I'm seeing how it's going, but we have not yet.
I think that's the right plan, though. As I'm hearing it, and I'm thinking about your practice in general, or specifically about how things are all packaged together and they fit together nicely. And, you know, we're seeing people do this weight loss thing and they're just like selling a shot, you know, like, just get your shot, lose the weight. But what if you paired that with, you know, a nutrition coach and someone to do all your wellness labs, look at your vitamins? Do you need you mentioned IV therapy. Do you need to get an IV as well? Should you be getting additional, you know, hormone checks and therapies? Like, it could be a whole program that's all encompassing with a very big important value, not just here's your semaglutide, go home and inject yourself and you'll lose some weight. I just think we're, you know, to take a brand like you've built where things are so not bespoke, but kind of almost like a tour feeling where everything is like crafted and curated perfectly together. It just seems like such a random thing to be like, here's a shot, go inject it, have fun. It just doesn't fit the motif, as they would say.
That's very true. I talked about it just yesterday. I'm like, I would want a nutritionist on staff. I would want the whole package. So exactly what you said. That's how I am with everything. And I always want to do it. I want to do it the best. And so my best version would have to be prepared for something like that outside of what we're good at. And I always say, stay in your lane until you really know and you have it down, perfected. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next 6 months to a year with that.
Yeah, I love the waiting game. I like to see what all falls out when you start shaking the tree before you jump on. But, you know, speaking of being in a really competitive market, you know, I mentioned you're in Dallas. I'm curious how you guys compete. Like, what is your go-to-market or your the compelling thing that gets patients to come and visit you? Because I'm sure you have med spas on both sides of you, across the street, you know, a mile down the road, you're probably 15 in your vicinity. How do you bring patients in, recruit them into your practice and keep them there? Obviously, membership programs are a big help, but what is your like secret weapon for people who can think through their market demographics, marketing plans, et cetera? Give us some tips.
I think really just building that relationship with each person that walks in your door, and that will lead to others. So word of mouth is number one. I've never been a paid advertising person. So it's probably not the fastest way to grow. However, reputation is everything. And so over time, just now we've built a reputation, and I would say we're recognizable with our in the area. So that's important too. So over time, just that's the biggest thing is word of mouth, reputation, and then the rest follows. You know, people will do Google reviews, then the SEO, you know, everything just follows into place. So really just pouring into each staff member and really helping educate them, getting them to be their best version, and then just it's a whole trickle effect.
Well, and let's discuss your website because it's beautiful. Like your website is so good. You have a little chat bubble on there, which I think is so critical to have a person who can, like, even if it's an autobot, can respond, text back. So you've invested in a really nice website. Word of mouth is critical. Do you think at some point you will turn on, like, Google Ads, paid words, pay-per-click, all the things? Or do you feel like word of mouth, like, perpetually delivers for you month after month, year after year?
So it's funny you ask this. In 2020, I launched an e-commerce website, and that's now become my big baby. I just grew one of our employees is growing into an opportunity with our website and building that even bigger. And so I feel like I have an extra additional business with the website. I'm getting ready to relaunch. We're kind of rebranding slightly, or maybe just, I should say, more significant, better version of our brand, and kind of working through our website a little more coming up, because that's a big baby. But yes, I would do paid as far as driving of that website. I think that's important. If you can just get people clicking on there, because how many people are home at night, 9:30 at night on their phones, and they see some ad? I mean, I see it all the time on Instagram when I'm looking through things and an ad pops up. So I think that is important. And so finding the right tools to do that is that's a big deal.
When I hear this obsession with Instagram, and I'm all for it, like I get it. But I think people, you know, I'm a millennial, I'm a geriatric millennial, so I'm 40 this year. We want the website. Like I want to go online and see whatever the Instagram thing is that compelled me or piqued my interest. I want to go look at your website online, look at your services, your about us, you know, teammate page. I want to see if you have e-commerce. I want to know who you are as a practice, not just your Instagram, you know, post that I've seen or ad that I've seen. And I think that we hear a lot that like, oh, websites aren't important anymore. I'm like, oh my gosh, if you're a marketing person, you're like, that's crazy talk. You have to have an amazing website. Like it's so critical, but people just don't invest in it. I'm like, you got to do it. But you mentioned e-commerce, which is a whole different animal. So how do you have time for that? And how does that work for you? Is it, you know, are you staff, are you not staffing, but retailing, you know, obviously into practices, but then also you have like a warehouse somewhere full of things you're distributing as well through e-commerce? Or what's the logistics of that? Because I'm sure that's a very tiring operation, I'm guessing.
So in 2020, it was a sort of like, let's pivot and figure out a way, because at the time I purchased all these injectables from Allergan, Galderma, and they were sitting there and we closed down for how many months. So launched that, did it out of SkinRx. It's still working out of SkinRx right now. Down the road, it will have to be a different location. But it's nice that we can kind of have it together, because there's times where we have the online store stopped and we have to borrow from each other. So that's why I said it's like an additional business. So it's taking time. I'm watering it slowly. It's growing, but it's not the full force version I'm used to. And so it's not priority. I think priorities are important. So, you know, the businesses are the most important right now. The e-commerce is kind of a bonus and learn as I go.
Yeah, it's just it's a different animal. When you can't build a relationship with somebody, it's always, I don't know, I think it's very challenging, but it's necessary. And people are going to buy it again from somewhere, might as well buy it from you. But, you know, as you look at your schedule and you trying to, I'm guessing that you probably still see patients maybe here and there, but running the businesses, you know, scaling your model, thinking about just having two, I said when we were in our little pre-chat, one is one, two is a million when it comes to locations. How are you maintaining like the SkinRx feel, how they treat customer or patients, how they treat each other as staff across two locations where you're not at both all the time, and making sure the culture like really sticks and permeates, and obviously the experience too, the ambiance in both locations?
So the way we set up a second location, there's a managing partner, so it's her ownership. So she keeps that going, and that's on her. And then I am there for guidance and helping scale and grow. So with that being said, just keeping, and in my South Lake location, I'm kind of the leader face of it, as well as my director of operations. So I think just having great leadership involved is important. That's the number one. And I do still see patients. I'm trying to see less and less over time. But as you know, that's hard when you build these relationships with people, because it becomes a long time, sort of like a friendship. So it's fun to have that, but just growing that leadership, kind of having everybody in a great happy place is a really good thing, and keeping that culture going. So I'm very careful when I hire, making sure that they fit in with a culture that's going really well. That's really important.
And how do you screen for that? Because we have that, you know, even here we talk about culture all the time. It's so hard to know when they interview. You know, we've had people who we've hired thought, gosh, they're a perfect fit. And then we're 6 weeks in, like, whoa, this is not what we thought we were going to, you know, we bought a bill of goods without really knowing what we were buying. How do you screen for that? Or even do they test drive, do a job shadow, or do you have assessments that you use? Because I think that that is the great conundrum for me every day. And for many people, it's like, how do you screen and scan for culture?
I think references are everything, and getting multiple references, not just the top three. So if you can have, you know, this small world, we typically know if they work somewhere. I can talk to previous owners. So that's really comforting at times. And then also just working interviews, you know, taking your time hiring. Just because the interview went well doesn't mean you should hire them tomorrow. So taking your time with it. Our onboarding is usually 1 to 2 months. So it's not a fast pace at all.
And then onboarding, are they learning about, you know, is it procedural based? I'm sure some of it is, because you probably have, I'm sure, proprietary procedures. But is it primarily about how you guys operate and do business and how SkinRx looks in the marketplace? Or are they like, okay, here's how you're going to inject your Botox?
Yes, there. I mean, it's what you just said. So there's a lot of operational behind the scenes, learning our clientele, what it's like, because if they worked somewhere out of state, it's not the same as this suburb of Dallas, right? So just learning that. And then also just taking your time, making sure you're properly educated before you start treating patients. So my estheticians usually shadow about 6 months, train for about 6 months before they even touch a person. So it's just investing that time in the right people. And there's been failures, and we learn from our failures.
Yes, we do. Especially in hiring. I feel like in the hiring world, because when you bring someone on, everyone's like, oh, we have a new hire. It's so exciting. They're like, wait a minute, that new hire is gone. Where'd they go? I'm like, well, we had to fire them. I feel like it's such a culture crusher, more so than anything else, when you have to hire and fire people. Or if you hire a bad person, they become a cancer and they start to wear down the whole organization and you don't fire them soon enough, equally as troubling for the staff. And that happens, I think, all the time too. But as you look at your people and going into, you know, the brand scaling across both locations now, I know that you have an ownership person who's there, but your name is still, in a sense, on it. So are there, you know, like standards, I'm sure, between both that they have to operate in a certain way because it's part of your world, or are they just completely separate altogether and it's just, they just share a name?
So I think the easiest, because I've learned a lot too, of course, failure teaches you things to, in the future. So I think the number one is having that brand guideline, you know, pay a service that does, that's what they do for a living. So having a brand guideline in place, also making sure you have a thorough policy procedure book, something that you can share amongst other locations. And then also having continuous meetings and communication is one of the most important things I see. I see a lot of, you know, we see franchises all the time, and these franchises don't last. And usually they're just kind of learning as they go, and they don't have that direction and guidance as much. As soon as they pay their fee and get the keys. They kind of do their own thing. So I think just keeping an open communication, that helps. And that's a lot of investing of time, but it pays off in the end.
Yeah, it just sounds like it does. It sounds like so much time, all the SOP manuals and the paperwork and holding them accountable to something, to say who's going to be their coach and their developer and look at their numbers and their metrics. And so from that perspective, you mentioned you have like team leads. I love that idea. I think we find a lot of med spas that they have the owner or, you know, the manager and then everybody else. Like there is no reporting structure, no hierarchy. It's like you're going to either go to the manager or you're on your own. And so I love this idea that you have like levels in between, because then someone's accountable to you and then they're accountable to them, and it's not all the work on one person. So as you think through that model in particular, what are your divisions of labor, if you will? I'm sure you have like a front desk group. You have, you know, give us like an idea of how that works, because I think people find that very fascinating, that you can actually put leads in place and make all that work without having like a formal career structure, if you want to call it that.
My director of operations is, I call her the glue. So she's communicating with everybody from the front desk team to the head of e-commerce to, and, you know, inventory has now gone to another person, and just kind of pivoting when it needs to happen with growth that happens, right? You're going to restructure in ways. And so we do have a front desk team lead. Then we have the aesthetic team lead, the lead injector as well. And they kind of report to the director of operations. And so I report to her, or she reports to me. So it just all is, everybody knows their place. And that's the beautiful part about it, is when everybody has this ownership, I feel like that's a better culture in general.
So I just love that, because I think part of the problem for people when they do all the jobs is like, which job do I do today? I'm the guy that's taking out the trash. I'm also seeing patients. I'm doing phone calls. I'm checking people out. I'm looking at inventory. It becomes a jack of all trade and a master of none. And I think we have this misconception that med spas are small and they can't have that delineation of labor, or that, you know, hierarchy, if you want to call it that. And so I feel like what you're saying is that you're able to grow because you have these things in place. So if you guys aren't doing that in your med spas, I would think hard about that, of having people who are in charge of or leadership people in place for different parts of your business, especially inventory. Gosh, that's a big risk. It just goes missing and it's sunk costs, or it expires. No one's watching it. It's just kind of there. So I feel like we should have learned in COVID to look at our inventory. We didn't learn that, but that's okay. But as you've grown up in the industry and, you know, 2015 to now, how have you learned to be good at business? Like, did you, I know you mentioned your parents, you know, obviously coming from this kind of an environment, but how did you learn to be good at business? How did you get business acumen and figure out things like hierarchies and retaining employees and culture and such?
Oh, goodness. I think I fell into it slowly. A lot of failure. Stepping out of comfort zone, big time. I feel like every year I'm stepping out of my comfort zone, or every day almost. But that's what builds greatness over time. I took on a business partner in 2017 that helped me with structure and, you know, kind of behind the scenes commission structures and scaling. That was a big deal. So that's really helped in general. Just, and before that, it was my mentor that kind of helped me with my business side of mentoring. And so as you build closely with somebody, find a mentor out there, and you'll probably get into that with the next question. So going to conferences, speaking up, that all leads to wonderful things.
Yeah, it does pique my interest, because I think about mentors a lot, because I just had a phone call last night with someone saying, hey, do you have a business coach I could call to learn how to be better at business? And I'm thinking to myself, like, I don't really know. I know a few of them in the industry, but so many folks look amazing on Instagram. They look like they're so successful. But then when you peel the layers back, a lot of that's a facade, right? It looks really pretty, but it's not the right business for what you're wanting to grow. How did you find a person mentor-wise? What were you looking for? And how should someone go about finding a person to help come alongside them and at least get them started before they can find, you know, a partner of some sort?
I think the biggest thing was, I knew going out, I was going to work for somebody for years, because you learn a lot that way. If you're going to go out on your own without having any knowledge, then that's the tough way. There's going to be a lot of failures. So really turning to different people, asking questions. I always find somebody that I'm in awe of, and I'll just end up asking them slow, you know, questions. Everybody loves to talk about themselves at some point. So finding a good time. So I think that's the key, is I know a lot of people that just don't listen and they don't ask questions, and those are the ones that are missing out on a lot. So that's my tip.
Yeah, everyone's business is unique in some way. I mean, they're not that unique, right? Because we're in the same industry, but I think there's such nuanced things that you got to kind of pay attention. I think a lot of the consultants I've come across have the same formula for every med spa that they interact with, the same website design, the same accounting thing. It's all the same. Like, it's got to be a little bit different here and there, nuanced things to make it all work. But with your partner that you have now, do you feel like that's brought in a whole nother ability for you to scale because you've got different operational things in place now? I mean, I say all the time, you got to have a person, a yin to your yang, right? If you're the creative and the artist and the person who sees the vision, who's going to actually execute it with you? I feel like you kind of have both, you know, both sides of the egg there. Has that been a big benefit for you long term?
It has been. They're involved really when I want them to be involved. So it's been really great over the years because there's times where I need to maybe bring on a different service, add a different structure, and having that guidance and being able to crunch numbers, that's a big deal because that's my weakness. So figure out what you're good at and what you're not good at, and then see, you know, fill in the blanks, whether you have to hire somebody to do that. That's always great advice too, is find somebody out there that picks up on your weaknesses.
Yeah, and who likes to do it and who can focus on it. I mean, there's many things that I do really well, but I don't have time to do them well. If that was someone else's only focus, like the person doing inventory, that's their only focus, it'll be done so much better than me doing it in and out here and there, a minute or four a day. It's too much chaos for me to do it. So I'm all about hire people to help you. Like, get on Fiverr, find consultants, find contractors, get help if you need help, because I think it's such a big part of the weakness we all go through. It's like we try to do all the things, we can't do all the things. But it like kind of comes into like coaching and delegating, and how involved are you now with like coaching your employees and really helping to almost mentor them? And are you mentoring other people now that you've been doing it to show them how to come up in the ranks and learn how to do what you've been doing?
I love mentoring other people. I do it on the side all the time, and it's usually friends or people I've stayed connected with or ex-employees. And I love seeing them grow. So I think now, and I try to coach my own people, I feel like I've seen them blossom and grow so much. I kind of step aside and I'm like, I'm here for you when you need me, and use me and abuse me. So that's where I'm at now.
Well, sometimes it is kind of abusing because they want you for everything. But I find that people they want to be coached until they don't. And it's like defensive, or they don't want to try the things you've mentioned. So mentoring for me is like mentally exhausting. I would love to do it. So I commend you for being able to do it. Because I'm like, just listen to me. I know what I'm talking about. Or you make a bad choice for them, then it's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I said that. I shouldn't have done that for you. It's a lot of pressure, Roxanne. I can't do it. It's too much pressure. So I'm glad that you can do it. But as you think about even the mentoring part, do you charge for those services? We hear about these shadow days now. People are charging like $4,000 or $5,000 to come shadow somebody in the clinic. I can't imagine that like in other medicine fields. But do you guys charge for shadow days at SkinRx?
We don't do it just because of the interruption of what we have going on, but I usually refer out. I know people in the industry that do. So typically I'll turn to somebody and find them the right person, kind of based on personality or demographic or what they're looking for. And usually I meet these people at things like Aesthetic Next Conference, other conferences. So I just know when to refer out.
That's, yeah, knowing to delegate, knowing to refer out. Those are the two things you got to know. So for you personally, you mentioned Aesthetic Next. I want to kind of go into a little bit of your personal fame and celebrity. So you did win some pretty big awards. You won the Esthetician of the Year, or they call it the Favorite Esthetician nationally for Dermascope. I think you won another like Skin Games thing. So you've done some pretty cool stuff. How do you get put in those rooms? Because I think people who have practices, they're head down, they're focused on building, they're focused on what's in front of them right now. But do those kinds of things give you more opportunities? And how do you get your name, you know, in the same room at the same table as people who are making decisions like that to become, in a sense, you know, quote unquote, famous?
I know. I reflected back on this, actually. I was thinking about it. And the one thing in common I have is I'm the type of person to go up to people and talk and, you know, have conversation. And it's actually out of my comfort zone, but I make myself do it. And I think the ones that kind of sit in the corner and just observe and don't say anything, and you're in a room full of 300 people, and if you only meet one person, how many opportunities is that? So really just going out of your comfort zone, getting to know people, ask questions, stay connected, cheer them on their social media, be involved. And it's kind of like community involvement. I think that's the biggest thing.
I think we're in this big movement right now about community over competition. You mentioned it before, like there's enough to go around for all of us. People say it, they don't actually practice it, you know, in the day-to-day they say it, but they don't really do it on Instagram or cheering on their colleagues. I feel like that right now is a big thing. Like as a meeting organizer, I don't want the drama. Like I can't handle it. If you're not a team player, you can't come. I can't deal with all the chaos. But you spoke last year to Set Connect. You're going to be speaking again this year. So what does that mean for you to go out and train and teach? Is that part of your passion? Do you want to keep doing more of that? And how will that fit into your overall other busyness that you have in your day-to-day life right now? By the way, she has two kids who are very active and do lots of many things too. So
one day I will. I like slowly, you know, going into it once in a while when I have the opportunities. I see myself, I would love to do it more. And so doing a couple a year, just kind of keeping my priority of growing my business as well. But one day I would love to do it more because it is fun. And you get to see the younger generation come up who are amazing. And they have a lot to learn. And so it's fun to see them succeed and grow as a result of you helping.
Well, and as you look down the crystal ball of the industry, where do you think we end up in, you know, 5 years? Where do you think, from an esthetician standpoint, particularly like in the spa services, what's the next big thing coming and what should we be preparing for as we think about those services going forward?
I think right now it's customizing. Everybody wants to customize, right? Everybody wants to be original and everybody wants to have their own thing. They don't want to do the simple protocol steps. So I think the next big thing is we'll see more and more TikTok. We'll see more estheticians reaching these levels of going viral. And it's mainly customizing. They want something that they haven't seen before. So I think that's the biggest thing right now. And then as far as all the new injectable services, I think some of the best injectors aren't really great at social media because they're, you know, honing in their skill and they're busy, but they're hiring people to do that. So that's kind of exciting to see all these other injectors realizing, okay, I need to be out there, put myself out there. So we see some new stuff that they're doing as well.
Well, do you think that stem cells have a role? We're hearing all these new stem cell products for estheticians to use in skincare, you know, different services and things. Do you see that there's a place for that? Because it's all the rage right now of what I'm hearing.
I think so. Anti-Age came out years ago with their stem cell version, and now it's getting big with the exosomes. And so that's something that is definitely that in peptide therapy. I think that's another big thing coming up too. It's been slow growing, and I see that replicating faster than anything.
Yeah, we've got Benev doing it. We have Ryan doing it. Exosomes are everywhere. And I think even with hair, we mentioned hair before, there's just multimodality, so many things you can do with it. But I feel like that's going to take the, you know, the historical like facial, the fluff and buff that you mentioned before, and take it to a whole new level where there's actually major, major results and big, big outcomes from services. Not just, you know, I came in, I feel better, you know, had a relaxing day at the spa. No, like I have some major results. So I'm excited to see that whole thing kind of take off and go. But as we kind of wrap up here, what's next for you? I know that you've got obviously two girls. What's the next big thing going on in your life?
I am so excited because I have just the best culture going on right now. So we are working on growing. We have two new injectors that have been doing amazing things. And so just seeing the growth in that, and then I can pivot and do more consulting on the side, do some more trainings, things like Aesthetic Next, public speaking, and just enjoy this aesthetic world and getting to know more people in the community, because there's a lot of knowledge out there. And so having the time to step away and get to meet everybody, that's the biggest thing. So I'm excited for that this year.
And will we see any more locations coming soon?
Possibly. Possibly in the future. I'd like to say as soon as one kid gets out of the house, then I can do another location for each time one of my kids moves on.
Hey, that's not a bad plan. Yeah, get one brain drain out of the house and then go get another one. I can understand that completely. Trust me. Well, any last thoughts for us that you want to say before we roll off?
I don't don't think so. I think if anybody's listening to this, I think you should definitely sign up for Aesthetic Next. It was one of the most amazing conferences I've ever attended, and that's what I hear from others as well. And so I'm excited to be on here. Thank you so much for having me.
Roxy, we've had a great time having you on today, learning all about your med spas and your plans for growth. And we'll see all of you guys next week for episode 58. Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening to another episode of For the Record. This podcast is not intended to provide legal or medical advice. It's for entertainment, education, and information purposes only. For more information on this week's guest or to get started with Aesthetic Record, email us at info@aestheticrecord.com. Be sure to tune in next week for more fresh perspectives on disrupting the status quo and surviving in the aesthetics industry.